Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here together with KHOI reporter Joy B. Thanks for listening in. Okay, we have lots to do, so let's get started. Here is Dennis Hart with a review of last week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here on this Friday. It's no surprise, none whatsoever, that politics made news in the pages of the Ames Trib this past week, since the November midterm election is just days away. Last Saturday, Republican U.S. Senator Ben Sasse came to Iowa State University to talk about foreign policy and American global leadership. Sasse said American leadership is essential overseas because, in his words, if the U.S. doesn't lead, what would fill the vacuum? He answered his own question by saying chaos would result from an absence of American leadership overseas. Saturday's Trib also reported on a public forum held in Nevada for Iowa House District 49 candidates. Republican State Senator Dave Dio and his Democratic Party challenger Brenda Brink took part. Dio told the audience he's focused on budget issues during his time in the state legislature, adding that the state's so-called rainy day fund is full and the budget is good. Brink said there's a revenue leak in Iowa, referring to millions of dollars in tax credits given to the Apple Corporation. Saturday's paper also had word that Ames police officers would soon start wearing body cameras that can record their interactions with citizens during police calls. The city council had approved buying 60 body cameras last summer at a cost of $66,000. Other expenses, including annual support costs and a three-year warranty, brought the total cost to $141,000. It will take about a month for officers to be trained and become accustomed to using the new cameras. Sunday's Trib had word that Montana Democratic Governor Steve Bullock joined two Democratic candidates for Iowa State Auditor and Ag Secretary at a campaign stop in Ames. Rob Sand is the Democrat running for auditor. Tim Gannon is running for the Ag Secretary post. Bullock talked about corporate influence in elections, saying elections should be decided by people, not by what he called undisclosed corporate dollars flooding in at the last minute. Also Sunday, the Tribune reported that the number of people who vote early in Story County in next week's midterm election could surpass the number who cast early ballots back in 2014, the last midterm. But an Iowa State University political science professor had a note of caution about that. Dave Anderson said people should not read too much into early voting numbers because they're hard to interpret and because Election Day voters still make the biggest impact. Sunday's Trib also had word that the city of Ames has chosen a new human resources director. Bethany Jorgensen was selected after a nationwide search. She's been human resources director in Bozeman, Montana for 2 years. She also worked in human resources at Danfoss in Ames. And three finalists have been chosen for the position of director of the Ames Library. The finalists are Cheryl Hyde, the current library director in Grimes, John Thill, the public services manager at the Meridian Library District in Meridian, Idaho, and Eric Seuss, the director at the Marshall Public Library in Pocatello, Idaho. Current Ames Library director Lynn Carey will retire in January. There was more in Sunday's Tribune, including a feature story about the new senior pastor at Collegiate Presbyterian Church in Ames. Brett Becker was born in New Jersey, moved to Southern California when he was just 2 years old, and grew up in a home where no religion was practiced. And one more note from Sunday's Trib, complete coverage of Iowa State University's football victory over Texas Tech 40-31 last Saturday at Jack Trice Stadium. The Cyclones' next game is in Kansas, tomorrow against the Jayhawks. Tuesday's paper reported that Ames and two other Story County communities were among 58 locations across the state of Iowa that were awarded more than $171 million in low-interest loans to help pay for water projects. The loans will come from the Iowa Finance Authority and the State Department of Natural Resources. Ames received nearly $6 million, money that will be used to create a system to keep stormwater and sanitary systems separate. Gilbert received a $4.5 million loan for sewer treatment improvements, and Cambridge received $200,000 for sewer planning and design. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported that the City of Ames has released its annual Residential Satisfaction Survey. Among the results, respondents said the city should focus on transportation and housing issues. Specifically, respondents mentioned extending Grand Avenue South, which the city is working on, and also mentioned the need for more affordable housing for seniors and for young families. Some said the city needed rent control. The survey also showed that residents thought more emphasis should be placed on police investigations of sex-related offenses and less on such things as parking and speed limit enforcement. The survey also showed that 51% of respondents had never used SciRide, that most of those who have used it are students, and that most of those who don't use it say nothing would make them consider using it. Also Tuesday, the Trib ran the first in a series of interviews with candidates in Story County election races. Tuesday's interviews involved Story County Supervisors Rick Sanders and Martin Chitty, two Republicans who are seeking re-election. Sanders said the top issue facing the county is the workforce and how the county manages future growth. Chitty said having a safe infrastructure around the county would be among his top priorities if he's reelected. One more story of note in Tuesday's paper, word that Iowa State sophomore quarterback Zeb Noland had left the football team so that he could transfer at the end of the semester. Noland's decision came on the heels of freshman Brock Purdy taking over as the team's starting quarterback. Wednesday's paper reported that the Ames School Board is weighing its options after word came that the project to build a new high school has what was called a $14.5 million overage. The original estimated cost was $123 million. Now the estimate is $137.5 million. One option could be reducing the proposed building square footage, but that could result in cutting some programs. Using additional funding is another option. Wednesday's Trib also reported that Story County supervisors honored victims of domestic violence at Tuesday's meeting. 304 lit candles were in the boardroom, representing those who have lost their lives in domestic violence situations around the state since 1995. And the boardroom was filled with many of the people who work on domestic violence issues in the county, all there to witness the supervisors signing a proclamation that draws awareness to domestic violence and issues related to it. Supervisors Chairman Rick Sanders said just because, in his words, we live in a fantastic community, it does not negate the fact that, again in his words, we have issues. Supervisor Laura Olson said the candles touched her emotionally, that, using her words, they took my breath away when I walked in. Wednesday's paper also had the second in a series of interviews with candidates in Story County election races. Wednesday's interviews involved Linda Merkin and Josh Opperman, who are both Democrats running for the Board of Supervisors. Merkin said if she's elected next Tuesday, she would focus on helping the less fortunate, whether that's through improving mental health services and funding or through housing. Opperman said working to fix the county's labor shortage would be a top priority for him if he's elected. Opperman and Merkin are challenging Republican supervisors Rick Sanders and Martin Chitty. Wednesday's Trib also reported that the chairman of the U.S. House Republican campaign condemned recent remarks by Iowa 4th Congressional District Republican Congressman Steve King on the topic of white nationalism. King issued a statement Tuesday denouncing what he called establishment never Trumpers and attacks that he said were, in his words, orchestrated by nasty, desperate, and dishonest fake news. King is running against Democratic Party challenger J.D. Scholten in next Tuesday's election. And one more note from Wednesday's paper, a picture and story about a collision that took place between a delivery truck and a Jeep that blocked lanes of traffic at Lincoln Way and South Duff Avenue early Tuesday morning. The crash flipped the delivery truck on its side. Police said the truck driver had experienced some kind of medical problem that led to the crash. Thursday's paper had another in a series of interviews with Story County candidates. These involved the two running for Story County treasurer. Incumbent Republican Renee Tweet told the Trib she's built a great team during her time in office and wants to continue her efforts. Democratic Party challenger Ted Rasmussen said he'd like to make the treasurer's office more professional, making it similar to a chief financial officer for the county. Thursday's Trib also reported that a group of residents had started a historical society in Collins. The group's displays are being kept and showcased in the Collins Community Center, where there are already a number of framed historical pictures. Work has also begun on a binder that would contain the history of every family that's been part of the community. Thursday's paper also had word about a new auto business that's recently opened in Huxley. The new business sells used cars, and it was opened by two men who say they're excited to enter what they call their first phase of retirement by running a hometown business. And one more note, a front page photo of several children dressed in Halloween costumes going trick-or-treating on Hodge Avenue in Ames on Wednesday night, which, of course, was Halloween. And that's your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that daylight saving time ends this coming Sunday morning, so be sure to set your clocks back 1 hour. I'll be right back here on Monday on Standard Time with a look back at a busy week of news from around the state of Iowa. Have a great weekend. Oh, say shalom, Bimroma.
Good evening. My name is Mike Householder. I'm senior pastor at Lutheran Church of Hope here in the Des Moines area. Here in Iowa, Field of Dreams is sort of like our state movie. It's the one that captures a lot of the spirit of agricultural life in Iowa, of dreams realized, of identity embraced, of relationships healed, things that the characters in that movie were all longing for, and I think we carry in our hearts as we gather here tonight. From different places and different neighborhoods, from different backgrounds, from different races, from different ethnicities, from different religious traditions. But as I was sitting over there waiting for this prayer service to begin, And I'm sure some of you saw it too, looking out the window or coming inside, to see the line of people continue to, like pilgrims, work their way into this room was like the closing scene of Field of Dreams. And this does not happen enough, does it? Where we gather together like this, and it's sad that it has to be a tragedy that does this, and yet here it is before us, and so we weep together, and we mourn together, and we turn to God because nothing less will do.
My name is Matt Martis LaCroix. I'm the senior minister of Plymouth Church. To our Jewish kin, to our neighbors and friends, on behalf of the people of Plymouth, please hear me say, our hearts are broken with yours. And the people of Plymouth Church stand with you. And I find myself wondering what it would be like if we would refuse to be comforted until all of these dissonant voices of hate are drowned by the sweet harmonies sung by people of goodwill. And to the Christians in the room tonight, let me say this. I wonder what it might be like for us to refuse to be comforted until we have wrestled with our own complicity in these events. Antisemitism is the original sin of Christianity.
I'm Rabbi Yossi Jacobson. I lead the Chabad movement and the Orthodox movement here in town. But with all the titles, we are all here tonight as the Son of Man. We are the family of the human race. We have to be very careful what we say, and we have to create a plan of action. And that is, we have to reap out any hateful talk against anybody. It destroys. The tongue could either bring life or destroy life. Maves v'chayim b'yad haloshem. The mouth could either shut someone's life off or give them life. They died out of unconditional hatred, and we have to live with unconditional love and care and looking out. That doesn't mean you have to agree with everything someone says, but definitely listen. Like everyone else mentioned before, listen and always find reason in communicating one to another.
We are not so different from our non-Jewish neighbors. Our Sabbaths and our holidays are different. We might eat or not eat differently than other people. But we also want to love and be loved. We want to build good lives for ourselves and for our community, all of our community. And we want to be good citizens of the United States. It's who we are, and it's who we've always been. As I preach and as I teach, I must hold the fear in my heart that I have. And yet, I must ask my congregants and the children I work with to find ways to love and to build relationships and connect, for only when we do that, the narrow bridge of the world might get a little bit wider.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you. When something happens like this, Muslims are very sad, but they are in fear too. And if there is someone with the Muslim's name involved in the evil, I didn't say a Muslim, I said with the Muslim name, because it's prohibited in Islam to do something like this or any evil. If there is any Muslim's name involved in the bad news, in some media, all of us or all Muslims would be accused. And we pray to you, God, for a sorrow to be a hope, for a vengeance to be a justice. Let mother's tears be a prayer that evil like this never happen again to anyone.
We'd like to call forward all of the clergy who are in attendance. There are a lot of clergy who are here, representing just about every religious tradition in Des Moines who are here. We got lots of clergy people here. It's a pretty amazing group, including the leader of the Sikh community. Come on. Come. Absolutely. So everybody and all those over there, please come forward here. Okay.
Those were some of the speakers during a memorial gathering and vigil that was held at Tifereth Israel Synagogue in Des Moines in Waveland Park neighborhood last Monday night. Hundreds gathered in solidarity to mourn the 11 people killed last Saturday during a Shabbat service in Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue. Mourners filled the synagogue to capacity as many others stood outside the buildings in Des Moines encircling it. 11 candles were burned at the podium, and leaders from many faiths shared their thoughts. At the end of the service, more than 60 religious leaders stood together behind the podium, including rabbis, deacons, reverends, pastors, an imam, and even a Sikh, against violence. During the past few days, people in Ames have been gathering as well in the wake of the Pittsburgh killing. Iowa State University's free speech zone outside the library saw student rallies on Wednesday. College Democrats and Republicans stood on opposite sides of the area, rallying for and against the 4th District House of Representative Steve King, who is being challenged in next week's midterm election by Democrat J.D. Scholten. A, quote, stand up and vote out, quote, rally was hosted by the National School Walkout Day at ISU, ISU Democrats, ISU Society for the Advancement of Gender Equality, and ISU Pan-Caribbean Community, coalition of student groups protesting King's position on gender, race, and immigration, health care, and environment. Republican students defended Representative King, saying he provides strong pro-American leadership who favors strong border security, bolstering our military, and supporting President Donald Trump. A discussion and sharing of ideas also occurred across the party lines as students discussed voting in general with each other. Meanwhile, Ames members of various faith communities gathered against Congressman Steve King in the wake of the Tree of Life Synagogue shooting. The Ames Jewish Congregation's president, John Pleasance, published a letter to the editor in the Des Moines Register together with a representative of the Mason City Synagogue saying, quote, Steve King is an enthusiastic crusader for the same types of abhorrent beliefs held by the Pittsburgh shooter, unquote. Mr. Pleasance is here with us today in the studio together with Barbara Pleasance. Thank you for joining us, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us what happened and, you know, how did you end up writing the letter, Mr. Pleasance?
So this all started really last week, sort of the end of last week. An article had come out in the Washington Post, which talked about Steve King and a trip that he'd taken this summer to Holocaust sites in Poland. And then when that was finished, he'd taken a little side trip to Austria, where he met with basically a propaganda group. He gave a long interview there. This is a group, the German name translated means uncensored. It's associated with something called the Freedom Party in Germany, which has some Nazi origins. And he, this was sort of the origin of this thing. And we thought about writing a letter at this point to point out the sort of the insensitivity and callousness of visiting Holocaust sites and then going to talk to something with Nazi connections. But then Saturday morning, the shooting in Pittsburgh happened, and that ratcheted this up to a brand-new level. And so we put together this letter. My wife, Barbara, will also talk about a second letter that got put together. The letter that I'm talking about was signed by myself as president of the Ames Jewish Congregation and Alan Steckman, who's president of the Mason City Synagogue. And then we thought we really needed a broader statement from not just the Jewish community. And this is where Barbara sort of spearheaded a letter involving members of a number of faith communities in Ames.
So was the catalyst really for these letters the trip to Austria or the Pittsburgh or the combination?
Well,
what was the breaking point?
It was really the combination, as I said. The initially it was, you know, just this trip to Austria right after going to Holocaust sites. That really raised our hackles. But then you know, we don't want to, you know, directly implicate Steve King in the shooting at Pittsburgh. I mean, that's doesn't make any sense. However, what we do want to point out is that the same ideologies that he's espousing were also espoused by the shooter in Pittsburgh. The same sort of tropes that Steve King uses were also things that the same tropes were used by the shooter in postings that he had on social media, things like the demise of Western civilization and George Soros, a Hungarian Jew, and his role in migration. Steve King, as we know, is very anti-immigrant, and so as was the shooter. And so there's some tenuous connection between the two. And basically we wanted to say, you know, his rhetoric matters and words matter, and, you know, he has to take some responsibility for what happened.
So partly what I'm hearing is this was kind of a long time coming, that these were opinions you had had prior to these events, and these were kind of the tipping point.
Well, yes. I mean, we've never been very happy with Steve King, who wasn't in our district originally, and so we could maybe write him off. But now he's in our district. Ames is now part of District 4. And so we've never been happy with him. But this wasn't really so much a tipping point for us. I mean, that we tipped a long time ago. But we thought this really was something that the voters in the 4th District really needed to hear about. They probably didn't read the Washington Post article. They really needed to hear about this and really think about whether this is the guy they want representing them.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, could you tell us what happened here in Ames?
Well, simultaneously with what John was talking about, at the same time, we felt there needed to be an interfaith statement. You know, his was from the Jewish leaders that they could recruit from the 4th District, but we felt that also we needed a statement from the Ames community, which is always very supportive in these kinds of situations. And again, this began before the shooting. I had already emailed a whole group to have a meeting at my house to draft some sort of a letter. And after Saturday, of course, that became even more relevant. So on Monday night, we got a group together to discuss a draft of a letter that I'd had developed.
When you say a group?
It was a group of someone, the head of the mosque, several Christians and Jews, and we had also invited some other people, and all of these people were asked to send the letter to their own contacts, which is why at the end we ended up with about 63 signatures on this letter that was published just yesterday in the Ames Tribune. And that letter was also in the Iowa State Daily, and both letters are posted or were yesterday on the Daily's website. And the letter that that John referred to, which went out first in the Des Moines Register, that has been picked up nationally and internationally, and our letter has been mentioned as well in some of those sources.
Could you give some of the content of those letters, please?
Yeah, I will say just a little bit. Here's a quote from the letter. King has a long history of making inflammatory comments. Just 2 weeks ago, he endorsed a self-proclaimed white nationalist for mayor of Toronto. In August, he accepted funds for a trip to Poland from an organization whose mission is to educate lawmakers about the Holocaust. Right after visiting Auschwitz, the infamous Nazi extermination camp, he went to Austria for an interview with a far-right propaganda site and so on. And that's what John just mentioned. And I should mention that I have been teaching the Holocaust at Iowa State for 25-plus years. And I'm very familiar with the rhetoric and the code words and the kind of language that went on in Nazi Germany. And this juxtaposition is just unbelievable. And I also want to mention that...
Can you elaborate on that just a little bit? An example?
Well, for example, the woman he endorsed in Toronto, she went to the rally in Charlottesville a year plus ago, where they were shouting, "Jews will not replace us." That refers to this great replacement, the threat to Western white culture. She has talked about the JQ. That's the Jewish question. The Holocaust was the final solution to the Jewish question. The group that that King had the interview with in Austria, members of that party have talked about things referring to immigrants in Europe as the 7th million that will die. I mean, it's clear they are talking to their constituency. They all know what these terms mean. And I want to mention that yesterday, many people probably saw the news clip of Steve King throwing out a questioner who was kind of trying to make the points that John just made. And in his explanation to the group he was speaking to after they threw the questioner out, he gave a long-winded explanation of why he went to Austria, and he did not mention at all the interview he did. And I have the transcript of that very lengthy interview with that group.
Uh-huh. So one of the points that he was making in this clip that you're referring to, in the it was kind of a – I'm not – it was, seemed like some sort of press conference in Des Moines. He was saying that there was really no direct link between – him, Steve King, and the Pittsburgh shooting, you know, a point that in a way is a logical thing for him to say. So that, you know, kind of asks the question, how, what is the thought? I mean, I think you've kind of been answering this, but if you could respond again to that kind of claim on his part that he really doesn't have any direct connection to the shooting in Pittsburgh.
Sure, he can say that, but this is part of the climate of what's going on in the country right now, that you can say whatever and then you can disavow any consequences for what you've said. We did not expect him to ever take responsibility, but that's the person asking the question wasn't saying you're to blame. What it was you share ideas. Where did that guy get those ideas? It's clear from his posts where he was getting his ideas, and the rhetoric matches the same rhetoric that we have heard a long time from Steve King.
The questioner was associating him with the shooting, not blaming him for it.
Yes, precisely, mm-hmm. Which is exactly the point of these letters as well.
And he didn't let him finish either. He threw him out and threatened the police and everything.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, one of the things, one of the analogies that I made about this is that basically – the shooter in Pittsburgh and Steve King are swimming in the same pool. It's just the shooter was off in the deep end. And so this is I think, the danger. And Steve King, you know, really pushes back hard on if someone claims he's anti-Semitic, you know, he supports Israel and so on. And I don't want to say that, in fact, he is anti-Semitic, but he espouses views, and he, in his own mind, may be able to separate his clear interest in pushing back on immigration from all these other things. But to embrace individuals like Faith Goldie in Toronto, and there's a guy in the Netherlands that he's supported, and then he interviews with the Freedom Party, all of whom are much more open about their Nazi sympathies. You can't separate the two. It's a package.
One of the things that was remarkable in Des Moines, by the end of the service, there was about 60 clergy people from any particular faith imaginable standing together in the front of the room, and it was just a real show of unity. Was that a similar type of a feeling, Barbara, that happened to your names when folks got together to make this statement?
Oh, yes. And we had other people who couldn't make it. There's people even now wishing they could have signed the letter. We got messages of support at the congregation from people in the community. We've had two different people leave flowers in front of the synagogue. That's what Ames does in these kinds of mm-hmm. situations. So that's very gratifying. But the Pittsburgh community, just to point this out, there's been many articles by people who live there, who grew up there, seems to have had a very similar feeling of tolerance. So no place is really insulated. And we did get one hateful post on the synagogue's website, which was Facebook page that was taken down. Mm-hmm. It was not from someone here. It was from someone in California. But it was a tirade.
Uh-huh. And this feeling of unity, is it more to support the Jewish congregation in Ames at this time? Or does it really translate for everybody into opposition to Representative Steve King? Because that's a little bit of a leap.
Well, as far as the people who signed the letter or discussed the letter, they were all on board with our criticism mm-hmm. of King. Mm-hmm. The people who sent support, that was in response to what happened in Pittsburgh. They at that mm-hmm. point, the letter was not public.
Okay. Thank you. I'm speaking with John Pleasance and Barbara Pleasance from the Ames Jewish Congregation, who were part of various coming together with people both in Mason City and in Ames to speak up in the wake of the shooting in Pittsburgh, to object to this type of hate activity and specifically to the way that Steve King's rhetoric is being associated with it or allows it to be associated with it. Any last words?
Well, I'd just like to say this is, I mean, we know this is really part of a much broader problem with hate in America. In fact, that this last week we saw three examples of that at a Kroger store in Kentucky. We saw two black people shot down simply because they were black. We saw pipe bombs being sent to somebody who was critical of Trump, and then we saw the shooting. So one of the things that we hope, I mean, right now we're focused on Steve King, but getting Steve King out of there isn't going to solve the problem, and people really need to work within their own communities to push back on hate when they see it in their own lives, when they see it in the political spectrum.
Will there be a continuation of this alliance between people in that effort?
I will say that for many years we have had an informal interfaith discussion group. That's some of the people who were at our house Monday night of Muslims, Christians, and Jews. And that will continue. If the election does not go the way we hope, there may have to be more efforts. I mean, right now we're focused on getting the word out about King and his rhetoric and his cloaking himself in I'm a supporter of Israel, which does not excuse his white nationalist kind of views. And that's the focus right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for coming in and speaking.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Complicated times we're living in, right?
Yes.
Yes.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. As we all know, Election Day is just around the corner, and how can we miss it? As we come down the home stretch, let's check in with the woman of the hour. Lucy Martin is the auditor of Story County. Lucy, we can't imagine how busy you are, and we want to thank you for coming to KHOI Community Radio so close to the election. So I did want to ask you, what's happening right now at the auditor's office?
Oh, many things. Thank you for having me, and I hope everybody knows that Tuesday is Election Day. Sometimes people wake up, and that's when they discover it's time to go to the polls. So this week in the auditor's office, we had our training for election officials. We have close to 300 election officials, which will be working at polling places. We've already tested the machines. That happened several weeks ago, but we're still packing supplies to go out to the polls. And a very big thing is we're processing voters in our office over the counter. So Saturday was the deadline to both pre-register to vote and request a mailed absentee ballot, but you can still vote absentee in person. That's happening in our office this week. We'll also be open from 8 to 5.
By in person, you mean to bring it in?
No, you can actually come in and request a ballot, and we will issue the ballot to you. You can't get a takeout ballot, but you can vote in our office during office hours. We're open 8 to 5 also this Saturday. Our office is in Nevada, 906th Street, second floor. And we'll be in the Ames Public Library from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday as well, up in the Danfoss Room on the second floor for in-person absentee voting.
Are you expecting a big crowd?
I think so. Just generally speaking, that last Saturday is everybody that, I can't get a mail ballot anymore, but I can still come and do that. We are also open Monday 8 to 5 for voting. That tends to be our biggest sort of high point in our office. I'm not sure what this Monday will bring, but 2 years ago we had 554 people come in and vote.
Wow.
During those hours. It was a busy day for us.
Can people still register to vote when they come to vote?
If they are not yet registered to vote, they would are subject to Election Day registration. So at this point, past the pre-registration deadline, you cannot separate the two processes. So if you want to vote, you have to register and vote. So you can't come in, register, and then go to the polls on Election Day. So, and those people have, since we don't have the time period to verify their residency, they have a higher standard of proof than you do prior to the pre-registration deadline, where we do that via the mail. Now you have to do it in person.
So in other words, you have to bring an ID that shows where you live?
Sometimes it's on your ID, if you have a driver's license with your current address. Sometimes it's a utility bill, a tax statement. Iowa State students can use their Access Plus accounts to show their ID, their proof of residency.
So if somebody moved and their ID has their old address, they can bring a utility bill?
If you've moved within Story County and you're re-registering, we still process you in the same manner. So you're not subject to Election Day registration. It's if you are a new registrant to Story County where you would be subject to that.
And how many people have already voted? Do you have an idea?
We've issued close to about 15,500 ballots at this point. We'll probably hit about the 16,000 mark. That's a real rough estimate. That's ballots we've issued. We won't get back all of those ballots. The majority of those were sent out by mail. So we'll probably count closer. I'm just guessing. A high percentage of those, maybe 85% of those, will come back eventually.
And are you seeing any problems so far that you didn't expect? Like, are a lot of people not signing the envelope?
There's always
things like that.
There's always, so we get our mail ballots back in trays. There's usually about 7 per tray that's not signed. Those are deficient ballots, and we contact those voters by phone and by mail, and they can come in and cure those. So
that's
a standard problem.
They have to do that before the election.
Absentee ballots are counted on Election Day, so we will stop. We will stop trying to fix deficient affidavits. That's actually in the code of Iowa. I think Saturday's the last day they can do that.
Okay. I heard that some people were getting sample ballots and accidentally sending those in.
That was in Linn County.
Oh, good.
So that wasn't in Story County.
Not Story.
So Linn County, they sent registered voters, I think, both an absentee ballot request and a sample ballot, and it said sample on it, but some people, I think the printing had faded on that, and some people filled that out and mailed it back. So that's not happening in Story County. That's an interesting story. It's sort of you try to help voters, and you end up creating a problem where there wasn't one beforehand.
So take time and read through your ballot carefully.
We do have sample ballots posted on our website. They're posted in our office, and at your residential precinct, there's a sample ballot for your precinct.
Anything else that you would like to say about voting?
Yeah, so on Election Day, you are required to go to your residential precinct. I know we have a lot of people come into our office and vote up through Monday of next week, but we can't process voters on Election Day in the auditor's office. You're required to go to your residential precinct. If you don't know what that is, you're welcome to call us, and we can, based on your address, we can tell you, or we have a link on our website where you can type in your address. It will tell you your precinct. It will actually map from your house to your precinct how to get there.
Oh, and did we say that the hours on Election Day?
7 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And if you arrive before 9 p.m., even if there's a line, you will get to cast a ballot.
And everybody's ready. You think you have enough people? And
we, we trained our election officials. We have people drop out. We replaced people yesterday. We will do that right up through Tuesday morning. You know, people have emergencies or illnesses that take them out of the process. And that's a standard, a thing that we deal with. It's not fun, but it's standard, I guess.
And I have to say, Lucy, I voted last week, and I really have to compliment the auditor's office. I had a lovely time when I voted.
Thank you.
I was treated cheerfully and politely and efficiently. Really had an enjoyable experience. So from my end, I've found the office really functioning exceptionally well.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's great to hear. I do have a great staff, and I have a number of temporaries that have worked out very well, too. Mm-hmm. So my hat is off to all of them.
And you've had a lot of voters so far?
Over the counter, I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I've mm-hmm. been away from my desk for the last 2 days, but a couple thousand
uh-huh.
in the office, a couple thousand out at our satellite sites. The majority is by mail, but
mm-hmm. it's a big silver box.
In the office.
It looks
right.
like a big suggestion box.
I think they're old, like milk delivery bins. That's what they look like to me.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice going to Nevada and doing that. Thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome. And, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. That was Lucy Martin, auditor of Story County. Excuse me. Remember that you can find personalized information about voting at 411.org. Also, the DART in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids and the buses in Iowa City are all giving free rides, so tell your friends and family. And HRTA in Ames at 1-877-686-0029 will be giving free rides. You need to call on 11-5 the day before election before 4 p.m., and they will give you a free ride. Thank you.
And Susan Guiasta is here for a monthly civic update from the City of Ames. Susan is the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. And welcome back, Susan.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you. So let's talk about Ames and what's happening in the month of November.
Seems like I was just here.
I know. It's always great to have you.
And another month and a lot of things going on in November. I always think of this part of the year as being a bit slower, but nope, not going to happen this time. We just finished up with Halloween, and for those people who have pumpkins that are kind of starting to melt mm-hmm. or not look quite so healthy on their front porches, please don't throw those into the trash. As you know, we have a waste-to-energy facility here in Ames. It chops up and burns burnable garbage and produces electricity. Things like vegetables, pumpkins, fall gourds, those things don't make good fuel, and instead we're composting those. But we do need you to bring those to us at the Resource Recovery Plant. That's at 110 Center Avenue, kind of on East Lincoln Way, just east of Duff. There's a big totes out there to throw your pumpkins and gourds in. And we'll take those until November 15th.
What is a tote?
They're big plastic bins.
So there's big bins that say pumpkins, put your pumpkins here?
I don't even know if they're labeled. They may be, but they're just big bins. They're on wheels so we can move them.
Uh-huh.
And they are on the north side of the building. So
bring your pumpkins separate from the trash.
Absolutely. Yes. Don't put them in there. Yeah. And we had a lot of success. Last year was the first year we had done that. We were able to divert lots of pounds of fall harvest vegetables that would have otherwise gone in the garbage, and those are then turned into compost. So that's a great situation for everybody. Just a reminder, if you're a golfer, We're getting close to the end of golf season by November 4th, which is coming up very soon. We'll close Homewood Golf Course for the season and kind of mothball it until next spring. So if you're a golfer, get out there. A couple other public meetings we have coming up. SciRide 2.0, that was the whole overhaul of the new SciRide system. So our public transit system had pretty much operated the same way for the past 20 years. They went through a large public input process, and SciRide 2.0 was sort of unveiled recently. There were some new routes, some changes. And now they're looking at some possible tweaks to that. So on Tuesday, November 13th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. in the library, you can share your thoughts with SciRide staff on SciRide 2.0. They're going to look at customer feedback that they've already received, and they have some suggestions, and then they want those people who participate in this public input meeting to provide additional feedback.
Again, that's when?
Tuesday, November 13th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the library. If you're not able to attend that meeting, there will be a survey up at SciRide.com, so you can take the survey if you're unable to attend the meeting. And really, again, that idea of getting feedback and input from transit users or potential transit users. Why aren't they transit users? How can we improve the system? You know, continually improving those city services is something that we're always looking to do. So give us some feedback so we can work on it. This is kind of a big one. Another public meeting is set for the Munn Woods Emma McCarthy Lee Park Sanitary Sewer Project. Over the last year or so, we have done a lot of work looking at those sanitary sewer mains, trying to determine where there might be leakage or infiltration. They had some difficulty getting through the sanitary sewer lines in this area because they couldn't access them. And so the idea would be to improve maintenance and access to those sanitary sewer mains. They're going to have to make some changes to that Munn Woods, Emma McCarthy Lee Park area. Obviously, that has people concerned. They want to know what those changes might look like. So there's a public input meeting scheduled from 5 to 6:30. Thursday, November 8th, in the city council chambers allow the city staff and consultants to provide information about the project and also to get some feedback. And it's not just if you live in the area, but if you use those green spaces and enjoy that area, you may have some concerns, and this way you can understand what the project entails. We have our second fall Yard Waste Free Day coming up this weekend, which is November 3rd. Saturday, November 3rd is the second Yard Waste Fall Free Day. These are, of course, huge events, very popular. The next events will be November 17th and December 1st, so mark your calendars.
And explain?
So Yard Waste Free Day is an opportunity for residents to take their leaves and drop them off at no charge at Chamness Technology. And that is located in East Ames off of East Lincoln Way. The actual site is on Friel Drive. They ask that you enter off of South Dayton. You bring your yard waste, leaves in this case, and then you can dump them and drive off. It really is a pretty simple procedure. A lot of people say, well, if I can't make the Yard Waste Free Days, how do I dispose of my leaves and yard waste? Most people can contact their garbage hauler and for a fee can have those picked up curbside. So Yard Waste Free Days are sort of an option if you want to haul your yard waste yourselves. Otherwise, contact your garbage hauler, or there are a couple of sites that will take yard waste for a fee. So again, Saturday, November 3rd is the next one. Saturday, November 17th, which includes brush, is a big one. And then Saturday, December 1st is the last Yard Waste Free Day. A couple of other things that are coming up, as most of you probably know, we are losing our library director.
I know. Lynn's going.
Yes.
In January, right?
Yes. After more than three decades.
It's the end of an era.
Longtime library director Lynn Carey will step down. Mm-hmm. And so the library plays such a prominent role in our community. We have three finalists coming in to fill Lynn's shoes, and they're awfully big shoes. But we want public input. They do.
Lynn would appreciate that.
She has small feet. Just big shoes.
But she really does shoes. A lot. It's amazing.
Yes. And so, you know, we have a vision for what a library director should be and what that person should do. We want public input on who the next person is. So there are three public presentations for our three finalists. Cheryl Hyde will be visiting us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 6th. John Thill will be visiting at 4 p.m. Thursday, November 8th. And Eric Seuss will be visiting at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, November 13th. That is the public presentation portion of their interview. This interview is being conducted by the Library Board of Trustees. The Library Board of Trustees actually hires the library director. It's a little different than other city positions that are hired through our HR department. Obviously, they're getting a lot of assistance and professional help from our HR department, but the Library Board is facilitating this hire, and we would love to see the public come out and listen to the candidates and then share their feedback. So,
are these people from Ames?
Actually, nope. No, none of them. The closest one is Cheryl Hyde is from the city of Grimes, not too far away. And her interview is at the City Hall Council Chambers. The second one with John Thill on Thursday, November 8th, he is from Meridian, Idaho. And his presentation will be at the Ames Public Library. And then our third presentation by Eric Seuss at 4 p.m. Tuesday, November 13th, is also in the library. And he is in Pocatello, Idaho. So two candidates from Idaho. A little different. But as we've done before, we've done a national search. So we tend to get a lot of interest across the country. I think we have a great reputation as a community that values and supports our public library. So we know that there's a lot of interest in taking the leadership role. And, of course, I mean, there's no stopping our library. There's so much great things happening there right now. Book sale right now. Mm-hmm. So
that's popular.
Yes. Just some notices about holidays. Obviously, the city will be closed coming up for Thanksgiving. We will be closed on the Thursday and the Friday. That is November 22nd and November 23rd. And then the one that does kind of surprise people, we are closed for Veterans Day on Monday, November 12th. So keep those in mind if you have city business you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Susan. Anything else?
Well, we always have things going on. We have the Humanitarian Award. The Ames Human Relations Commission annually gives out what is called mm-hmm. the Humanitarian Award. It's something that is presented at the Martin Luther King Award, the Martin Luther King reception on Monday, January 21st. The Human Relations Commission seeks nominations for this award. This award recognizes and honors a worthy individual whose contributions to our community demonstrate extraordinary quality, including efforts to promote diversity, fairness, and equality. And I think right now, more than ever, those characteristics are so, so very important. And I know that there are good people in this community that are working towards that goal. You can get that nomination for the Humanitarian Award at cityofames.org/AHRC, which is Ames Human Relations Commission. Again, cityofames.org/AHRC. Applications are due by noon on Saturday, December 15th.
So you can nominate somebody that way.
You absolutely mm-hmm. can. And I hope that we receive many nominations this year. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Susan. We are speaking with Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames Public Relations Officer. And it's always a pleasure to have you here, Susan.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Looking forward to see you in a month. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk was engineered today by Aladdin. Thank you, Aladdin. And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. I have been one of your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg, here today with Joy B.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays. You can also hear a copy of this show on the homepage of KHOI Community or KHOIFM.org later today. KHOI broadcasts at 89.1 FM and is heard on the online at KHOIFM.org, where you can also find an archive of past shows. Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a radio show. So contact us if you would like to try your hand at reporting or engineering. We will train you and welcome you into the Local Talk team. Please remember that your participation and support as audience is what makes Local Talk and KHY meaningful and possible. And please remember that your voting is what makes democracy meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting Kenny G, November 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu. That's center.iastate.edu.